Teach Me to Code, episode 25, interview with Eric Malamazura. Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Teach Me to Code podcast. Before we get going, I just want to remind you that this podcast is sponsored by New Relic. New Relic RPM is one of the greatest monitoring tools out there for Ruby and Java. It's terrific. It'll tell you where your slowdowns are on your site, where optimizations need to be made, errors, it does all kinds of stuff, and it's just super. So I highly encourage you to go check it out. Go to www.newrelic.com and tell them that I sent you. All right, well, I'm going to go into an interview that I did with Eric Malamazura. Now, Eric he's kind of in an interesting place. He is both a freelancer, and he's developing a product that he's hoping to put out there. I'm going to let him I'm going to let the interview kind of go into what that is. But if you're a budding entrepreneur who's building his own software that he plans on putting out as a product, or if you're looking for hints and tips on how to find work as a freelancer, all of that is in this interview. So I highly recommend that you give it a listen. Let me know what you think by going to the show notes at teachmetocode.com/podcast. And just leave comments and let me know what you think. I really, really appreciate it. So here's the interview and Eric, and we'll pick you up on the other end. Thanks.
Well, my name's Eric Malamazura. I started a company called Elusisoft about February 1st, 2010. Before that, I have been in consulting, .NET, Microsoft Framework, doing SharePoint stuff for about 10, 12 years now. And I've always wanted to, get my own product out there and make the world a better place, really. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Cool. So are you... I'm just going to go ahead and run the interview from that point, because I think you introducing yourself was fine. Okay. I'm a little bit curious. Were you looking for a product? I mean, were you looking to start a company and decided that this was the product you were going to run? Or did you decide that the world needed a product like Agile Dash and then decide to start up a company to put it out there?
Yeah. So... I've done a bunch of consulting work, and I've also run a bunch of software development teams in the past. And during running those teams, I was project manager, scrum master during some of them, and some of them I was actually just a developer. And one of the key pains that kept coming up was, while running a distributed team, how do you manage the project, and how do you track the user stories, the requirements, and how do you, do all that? So one of the things that's commonly asked is, what software product do you use to track all this? And a lot of times Excel is used, and that works great, or Whiteboard is used, and that works great for a team that's located, centrally, in the same room, the same building. But when you get to a distributed team that's located in different states or internationally, it becomes a problem, and you need some kind of software tool to keep track of everything. And a lot of companies have bought into the whole Microsoft solution, the whole Microsoft Office package, and included in that is SharePoint, which integrates very well with the whole Office suite. And my idea was, a lot of these products that currently exist to track, an Agile project or a Scrum project, a lot of them require you to set up your own server, run IIS or run Apache, and install this whole framework. And that seems like a lot of overhead to me. And if you could utilize your existing platform, like SharePoint, that's already running, that already has backups, that already has this redundant hardware, why not utilize that? And SharePoint has a rich feature set where you can just install features into it. So that's what Agile-SP is designed to do. It's designed to like kind of just sit on top of the SharePoint framework and allow users and project managers and Scrum Masters to kind of utilize that and have a rich interface at the same time. So that's the pain point it's trying to solve.
Okay, that makes sense. My next question is, so this is it focused primarily toward the .NET or the Windows, I don't know what to call it, software suite users, or can other people use it? For example, I'm a Ruby on Rails developer, and I work in a shop with other Rails developers and Flex developers, so we don't really subscribe to the Microsoft tool set or software suite. So is this something that we could use, and if so, how do we use it?
Yeah, so the first release of Agile Dash, or at least the goal with Agile Dash, is it's going to be a suite of products. So the first release was going to be Agile-SP, which is Agile-Dash for SharePoint.
Uh-huh.
That framework will be only for SharePoint, 2007-2010. But Agile-Dash itself, which is a core platform, will be available probably sometime, if not this year, next year. Will be available on the web for a subscription type fee. So you'd pay like monthly, maybe run on Amazon, EC2 platform probably. The whole Agile Dash framework is Silverlight based. So if you have a web browser and you want to, you know, use it, you can use it with any web browser. Silverlight's supported by almost all the web browsers now. So if you're a Ruby guy, you can use it. If you're a Java guy, you can use it. For now, the first release, the SP release, will be SharePoint only, though.
Okay. My next question is, in your opinion, what makes a good Agile dashboard? I mean, there are so many out there, So, what are kind of the critical features for a good Agile dashboard?
Yeah. So I think some of the critical features are less is better. Mm-hmm. You don't want the tool to get in your way, right? And you also don't want to get caught up in using the tool. So my thought is to kind of just aid the user or aid the Scrum Master in handling everything. I think one of the time-consuming things with managing an Agile project is, you know, tracking the user stories and tracking the points and tracking the bugs and handling, you know, kind of the charts that you would, you know, like the sprint burn down chart, stuff like that. That's mm-hmm. that's a bit time consuming. And if the tool can do that for you, you don't have to spend a lot of time doing that. I think you focus more on the problem at hand, which is your software product, right? I mean, your project.
Mm-hmm. So. That makes sense. And you know, it is important to manage that. Are there other aspects of it that you know, maybe resource management, or you know, I guess you have a burn down kind of like a Gantt chart, or there are other ways of representing it. But you know, ultimately, so is this just tracking your user stories and your points, or you know, do you go into some of these other issues where you know you represent what you have or your resources that go into building the software?
Yeah. So the goal with the SharePoint one is just to track user stories and points for now. I've looked into you know, building on personas and stuff like that. And there's all kinds of, you know, additional stuff you can add to a tool like this. And a lot of the existing tools out there support these things. I think one of the things that I would like to see, or I'd like to see happen with the web version of Agile Dash, is, you know, integrate support with other sites like, you know, the Zen Help Desk or, mm-hmm. or, you know, Campfire or something like that, you know. and get tight integration with those tools. Instead of reinventing the wheel, we would integrate tightly with other platforms that currently exist.
That makes sense. But aren't you reinventing the wheel? I mean, if you're tracking user stories and points, I mean, for my job, we use Pivotal Tracker, and that pretty much does the same thing. I mean, you have the user stories, you have the number of points, you have the milestones. It breaks it up into iterations for you. Is there something, you know, different that Agile Dash will offer that Pivotal Tracker or something like it doesn't?
No, not really. Not for the web version, but for the SharePoint version, that's completely different.
Right.
And like I said, I would like to see a web version. I don't know if it makes sense at this point, but I think the SharePoint version definitely makes sense. And our goal is to support as many platforms as possible. And if one of those platforms ends up being the web version, that would be awesome. But Pivotal Tracker is awesome. We actually use it in-house until Agile Dash SP becomes mature enough for us to, you know, dog fooding our own product. We use Pivotal Tracker right now, and it's a great product.
Right. Now I'm going to switch gears on you a little bit.
Sure.
Because I know that some of our listeners are also interested in entrepreneurism.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about how you got to where you could start a company. I mean, did you seek out funding? Are you bootstrapping this? Did you have help getting it going?
Yeah, so I'm a strong believer in bootstrapping companies. And I think one of my role models in this whole, you know, starting my own company type thing was Peldy from Balsamic Mockups. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him or not, but he started Balsamic and was very successful in bootstrapping that product. And I've been following him using his products for a very long time, and he was kind of inspirational for me. Joel Spolsky was another kind of inspirational leader for me as well. And you know, it seems to be a very successful way of starting your own company.
Okay, so if let's say, for example, I want to start up, and I'm just going to throw something out there. Let's say I want to start up a recipe website. And I know that this is going to be a big money maker for me, and I want to bootstrap it. What are some of the things that I need to do to get it going?
Yeah, so the first thing you need to do is actually have a viable product, right? Something that someone would be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there is interest in the product, then the next step would be, you know, to get yourself some presence, some web presence. Use Twitter, Facebook, whatever. You could pay for ads if necessary, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the advice from a lot of these successful startups say just you know, if you have passion in your product and you're able to get other people that are passionate in your product, word of mouth is the most powerful, you know, method possible. And if you can get that, then, you know, it's all, you know, you're good from there, hopefully, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal, anyways.
Right. So you have other developers working on this at this point, right?
No, I have me, and, you know, that's about it right now. My girlfriend is a huge supporter of mine, so I do hope to bring in additional developers eventually. So.
Huh. Okay, so you're doing this on your own. You're using Pivotal Tracker. Is this kind of a part-time thing, or you, in other words, do you have a full-time job, or are you working on this full-time?
Yeah, so it's about 50% of my time is devoted to that. The other 50% is devoted to consulting work. So we also, mm-hmm. or I also do consulting work. And most of it's around SharePoint development, custom development of customers, and any kind of, you know, work they need done. That could be custom development, Microsoft.NET framework development, or SharePoint custom development with like web parts or workflows or whatever they need.
Mm-hmm. And this is another thing that I'm interested in is the whole idea of consulting. How do you go from having a full-time job to, you know, being able to consult full or part-time?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. And a question I had for a very long time, and I could never find an answer to that until it actually happened. The way it happened for me was, and it may be out of the norm. I'm not sure if you could actually do this, but I was on a contract with a full-time job, you know, W-2 salary type thing, and it actually came to an end. And I got lucky because I had a friend that I used to work with who had one of his customers. He was working at a full-time job. His customer needed somebody to, do some work for them, part-time work, right? It was like 20 hours a week that they needed. So I stepped up to the plate and, took that on and got it done. And after that, I was able to find other clients just by, networking with everybody I've worked with in the past. And that seems to be working so far. So networking is the number one ideal way to do it. LinkedIn is a powerful tool to use. Facebook, and Twitter. I mean, those three things right there is what it's all about. I've gotten more work from LinkedIn than I have through any other, type of communication mechanism.
That's interesting. And, right off the bat, I can see a couple of ways of leveraging those. I mean, whether it be through people you actually already know, or there are so many professional groups on there of businesses that need technically savvy people who can not just maybe build them a website, but can show them how to take advantage of technology for their business.
Exactly, yeah. And if you participate in the discussion boards on LinkedIn, I don't know if you've ever taken a look at that. I mean, it's like a little hidden gem of LinkedIn. The discussion boards are very active, actually, and there's groups on there for like Agile and Scrum and SharePoint. There's Ruby groups on there as well. And if you can get, if you can participate and notice in those groups, a lot of those people that participate in those groups are some of them are pretty high up in the ranks at some of the companies. So if you can get recognized, you can have a really powerful connections and just work it from there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm going to have to look at that. It sounds like I've been looking in all the wrong places, because I've been looking at picking up some part-time work, but it just hasn't worked out. And, I intend to use this podcast at least a little bit as a platform for that. But really, my focus with the podcast and the screencasts are more just to be able to help people. But, it is interesting that, as you meet people and form communities or join communities, that opportunities will come out for you.
Right. Yeah. That's what I found, that it's all about, meeting people. If you meet enough people, you'll have the opportunities pretty much handed to you on a plate.
Okay.
And it's kind of funny like that, right? Because you can look and never find anything, and then you just meet the right person, and you automatically you have work. So
yeah, it makes sense.
And I found that, the consulting work, I've noticed a pain point, right, with Agile-SP, and that's how I noticed it. And, it's, without doing that work, I would have never known that a lot of people have this problem, and if I didn't know people had that problem, I wouldn't be able to offer something for them to solve it with. So I'm hoping that, people that have this problem will find that I have a solution for them and that they can solve it, using that.
Yeah, it makes sense. And, I don't know. I'm not very knowledgeable as far as things like SharePoint go. I've used it, but I don't know a whole lot about it. Are there any other products or offerings that do the same kind of thing related specifically to SharePoint?
There isn't. There is another developer that has another company that's developing kind of in parallel to what I'm doing. It's a similar product, and it's kind of funny because we were kind of like in the same community, and we just happened to like bump into each other, and we were like, "Hey, I'm working on this product," and he was like, "Hey, I'm working on this product also." So it's two different people from two different started their own companies to kind of solve the same pain point. So, you know, there's like a lot of issues there. If two people from, and he's from the UK, I'm from the United States, right? So there's complete separation there between, you know, distances and cultures. And it's kind of like, you know, there must be a serious, you know, issue here that needs to be solved if, you know, that kind of collaboration is happening.
Yeah. So if you know that you have a competitor that's working on the same or a similar product to you, then at that point, how do you determine whether or not you want to release early versus get all of the features in or things like that? How do you decide then where to release? Does it change anything for you?
Yeah, so that was I struggled with that pretty hard. When I first found out about, you know, the competitive product, I was kind of bummed out, you know. I thought I had something unique and you know, I was going to make lots of money off of it or you know, whatever. I read a lot of books. And I read a book called Rework. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I have. I listened to quite a few podcasts, and most of the tech people are talking about it, and a few of the business people are.
Okay, it's by Jason Fried and David, I'm going to say this wrong, Heinemeier Hansen?
Yeah, David Heinemeier Hansen is the creator of Ruby on Rails, which is the framework that I work in. So I know who he and Jason are, as well as a little bit about 37 Signals.
Yeah. He talks about Ruby in this book a couple of times. And yeah, I do have some experience in Ruby, by the way. I've dabbled in it. I've never actually, you know, worked in Ruby on Rails, but Ruby the language. But yeah, this book was kind of it kind of put the spark back into me, because when I found out about you know, the competitive product and all that, I kind of bummed it down. I was like, well, should I change my business strategy? Should I, you know, do this or do that? Or should I rush the product out or whatever, right? So after reading this book, I was like, you know, maybe there is, you know, hope and everything. And a lot of what he and Jason and him wrote about in this book is kind of inspiring, and it kind of just makes you want to, you know, just do it, and you have, like, it reignites your passion. And I was really, you know, fortunate to run upon this. And I think someone tweeted about it in Twitter, and that's how I found out about it. A lot of other books have actually given me inspiration too, and I think it's about finding inspiration to keep you going. And I think no matter if you find out you have 100 competitors or you have 1,000 competitors, right? I mean, one of the things that he iterates over in his book is, if they say you're going to fail because you have 1,000 competitors, well, or if others have failed, you know, where you're trying to succeed, well, that's not you, right? I mean, they may have failed, but that doesn't mean you're going to fail, because you're not them.
Mm-hmm.
So you always have a chance of succeeding no matter what. So I think that's kind of like, you know, the spark that's keeping me going right now.
That makes sense. Well, and it's interesting too with the kind of small businesses, or even kind of the one man show kind of businesses, where, you know, you don't have to be 37 Signals, for example. You know, you don't have to have thousands or even hundreds of customers to make it work for you. I mean, when it comes down to it, Eric needs to make enough money to support Eric. And, you know, if it does that and it gives you the lifestyle you want, then it's a success. So, I mean, if critical mass is 20, 30, 40, 50 customers, then it's a success. And as long as they are getting out of your product what they expect and want to, then, you know, it makes a lot of sense that, you know, okay, so I'm not shooting for the moon. You know, I just need to get above the trees so I can fly.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, my goal from day one was, you know, I don't want a, you know, multi-million dollar company or anything like that. I just want like a little small, tiny company, maybe 1 to 3 people, and you know, just enough to kind of support myself and support the products that I actually believe in, you know, that I'm passionate about. I don't, I don't have any of these, like, you know, ridiculous dreams or that are completely absurd. And mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, a good goal to have.
Now, what are the things that you're passionate about? I mean, is it the agile stuff, or is it programming in general? Is it SharePoint and the related technologies there? Is there a particular niche, or are you passionate about something completely different and you're just trying to make enough money to support that?
Well, I'm passionate about a lot of stuff, and mostly it's just technology in general. I'm passionate about agile. I know through my software career, it's been one of the huge problems with the software development is actually having it succeed, right? Uh-huh. So the agile movement. I went to Agile Conference 2009, and before that, I did a lot of training and got certified as a Scrum Master and all that. And through these conversations, the presentations that some very smart people have given, like what's his name? Cockburn.
Alistair Coburn.
Alistair Coburn. That was it. He gave a presentation in 2009 at a conference, and that was an incredible presentation. And just people like him, you know, just listening to them and you know, hearing what they have to say is inspiring. And that's when I became, like, very, very passionate about the whole agile thing and mm-hmm. getting, you know, these software teams that are having these problems, getting them to succeed. That's my main goal, is just to help other people. And in doing so, I want to, you know, kind of do something that I enjoy at the same time, which is writing software. So,
right. Yeah, it's interesting. I went to a meeting last Thursday, and it was about starting your own business. And the first person to get up, he's actually my old boss. He got up and he said, "Well, here's what you need to start a successful company." And this is the guy. He started up a company with a product called Mosey. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's an online backup software.
Yep, I use Mosey.
And so the CEO, he was the CEO, his name's Josh Coates, and he got up and he basically said, here's the secret to success. And then what he did is he put an X on the board, and then he drew a box and an arrow pointing into the box, and in the box he put F of X, like the mathematical formula representation. And right. then he drew another arrow coming out of the box with Y. And he basically said, whatever your Y is, you know, and that really to me equates to what you're passionate about. You know, you need to be doing something that is this, that gets you to your Y. And whatever you're doing is this formula that you place yourself into, because you're the X that goes into F of X. And if you can't place yourself into a system that gives you whatever you're after, then you know, you shouldn't be in it. You shouldn't be in business for it. You shouldn't be worried about it. You shouldn't be thinking about it, because ultimately you will fail. And so it's interesting to hear you talk about, you know, your passion for agile development and, you know, programming processes and just programming in general, because, you know, ultimately what that says to me is that you at least have the foundation that will lead you to success in this area.
Yeah, I believe that. And I think without having that, you know, without at least believing in what you're doing, you're not going to be successful. Or you might be successful, but only by chance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think a lot of examples of that exist. You know? And I definitely don't believe that you should ever commit to something that you're not passionate about. And I don't see why anyone would really want to do that. I mean, if you're not passionate about it, you're not going to enjoy doing it. So you're not going to really put in the effort to make it right, right? I mean, you're not going to mm-hmm. really believe in it. So there's no point in really, you know, doing it at that point. I mean, you're not going to make something that's worthwhile or that you're not going to pour your heart and soul into.
Yeah, it's tricky, though, because and this is a trap that I fell into and I really had to think about, was that you hear people talking about what they're passionate about. Right. And, you know, so I listen to podcasts. I've brought that up several times, but several of the podcasts I listen to are by people who have gone out and kind of created this business around whatever it is that they're passionate about. And I totally missed the point when I was listening to that, because they talk about the lifestyle that it got them. And I was like, oh yeah, well, I'm definitely passionate about starting a business that'll get me the lifestyle I want. And I didn't think about, okay, well, what are the things that I'm passionate about that I want to, you know, pursue that will get me to, you know, that some level of satisfaction. And I just assumed that, oh, if I have my own business, then I can, you know, do this and this and this. And so, you know, my wife has heard me talk about idea after idea after idea for a business, and I've never followed through on any of them, because when it came down to it, I didn't really care about what those businesses were about. And so I talk about it because I like the idea of having a business, but when it came right down to it, none of them were really about anything that I was passionate about.
Yeah, I think that's kind of common. I mean, when I was younger, or up until now, right? I mean, I have a folder on my computer that's called projects, right? And there's mm-hmm. at least 60 projects in there that I've started writing. They're mostly, you know, just software projects. They're like ideas, brilliant, most brilliant idea in the world, right? To me, at least. And mm-hmm. I started writing it. Some of them are actually pretty big. You know, I spent a year and a half on the biggest one. I think it ended up being around 50,000 lines of code. But I never released it, right? Because in the end, when I got to that point, I realized that I really don't care about this anymore. I mean, after a year and a half of writing it, I started off, you know, I was like, oh, this is a good idea, but I'm not really interested. But I think I can make money off of it. And then after time went on, I started caring less and less and less. And eventually, at the very end, I was like, you know, I didn't really care about this to begin with, but the only reason I started was like, I think I can make money off of it. Mm-hmm. And then at the very end, I got to the point where I was like, I know I can make money off this, but I really don't care about it. And I don't want to support this anymore. So it just mm-hmm. sits there, you know, it's like kind of like a legacy. And I always go back and look at those, and I'm like, that's kind of like a reminder to me. It's like, don't do something that I don't care about, you know. I mean, if I don't care about it, I'm not going to put in the time to support the customers that do care about it. And it's kind of, it would be unfair to kind of just kind of throw something out there just to make a dime off of it.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And it's interesting, because when I came to the realization of what I was passionate about, I had done this podcast for almost 5 months. And, you know, that's the longest that I'd really stuck to anything other than a job that paid the bills. And, you know, it was interesting. So I really started thinking about it. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, you come to that realization where it's like, okay, well, now that I really enjoy, you know, doing X and Y and Z, and for me, it's helping people find some sort of success with technology. And it doesn't have to be other technologists. It can be small business people. It can be anybody, you know. But ultimately, I feel like we have such an opportunity, if we understand technology, to make life better for other people. And I feel like that's really where my passion is to help people understand how they can make their lives easier or better in that way. And, you know, so now that I understand that about myself, now I'm really evaluating, okay, now how do I help other people, you know, find this success through technology.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think there's a lot of, you know, smart people out there that have already solved a lot of the problems for you.
Yeah.
And they've written a ton of books on it. I mean, and I think you asked me at the beginning, what's the first step? And I almost want to go back and say that the first step should be, you know, educating yourself on mm-hmm. on other people's mistakes, right? And right. There's lots of, you know, great things that other people have written, and if you can avoid those mistakes, you know, through their knowledge, then you have that extra advantage to being successful.
Right. Now, you've mentioned the Rework book by Jason and David. could I get you just to recommend a few other resources that you think other entrepreneurs or other programmers, if they're not interested in being an entrepreneur, should read? Why don't you tell us just a few resources for entrepreneurs, and then we'll get the resources for the programmers.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Let's see. Freakonomics, and Other Riddles of Modern Life. That's a good one. That's by Stephen Levitt, I think is his name. Let's see. What else? Influence. Have you?
I don't think I've heard of that one. I've heard of Freakonomics, but I haven't heard of.
Yeah, Influence is by Robert. I'm gonna mess this up. Cialdini. Cialdini. That's a good book as well. It's kind of like it's almost like a self-help book, but I don't want to say it's a self-help book because, you know, a lot of people avoid those. But it's The Psychology of Persuasion is how he sells it, and it's basically a book on how do you persuade someone to your side of thinking, right? And like you've been in a situation multiple times where you have a conversation with somebody, and you know you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, you've checked your facts. You're right. And they're wrong. But how do you persuade them to your way of thinking, right? To make them believe that you're right. Because sometimes people, if you're too upfront about it, they're gonna go into defensive mode, and they're gonna be like, well, you know, you're not right. I'm right, and stuff like that. So it's actually a good read. It's basically, like, you know, the psychology and how to handle a situation better than you typically would. Another good book is Crossing the Chasm, and that's by Geoffrey Moore. It's about marketing and selling technology projects. I think, and I want to find this book. Any book that's written by Guy Kawasaki.
Okay.
I think that's how you say his name. Any book written by him is the Bible of starting your own business. Absolutely the Bible. And he is just a freaking genius when it comes to this stuff. And he's written tons of books. You've probably heard of many of them. The Art of the Start, The Time-Tested Battle, is another book he's written. Reality Check, The Reverent Guide to Outsmarting, Outmanaging, and Outmarketing Your Competition. Is another good book, and I've actually read all these books that I'm mentioning to you from front to end, from front to back. So, and they're excellent books. And if you're actually designing like a GUI or something, I would, you know, recommending Don't Make Me Think. That's a really good book. Kind of about, you know, designing interfaces to prevent the user from being confused, you know,
right,
or anything like that. So, and yeah, I'll actually post a list of books that I've read, so any of your readers can actually go through them if they're interested.
Yeah, that would be great. In fact, I'll probably put the list on the show notes for this episode. But if, you know, yeah, if you want to put that up, then I'll link to that as well, and then you can add other books as you come across them.
Okay. Yeah.
Are there any books that you recommend for programmers or developers? And it doesn't have to be agile, it can be anything.
Well, in general, Code Complete 2 is probably a book that every programmer should read, period. No matter, even if they're not really, you know, in the Microsoft world. It is a Microsoft book, but it's not really Microsoft focused. It's more about, you know, if you're writing code, this is how you should do it, and these are the things that you should keep in mind if you're going to do it. I think that's one of the invaluable books. Let me see here. See if I can actually find. I think another book would be Working Effectively with Legacy Code. It's written by a guy named Michael Feathers, which you may or may not know, but it basically discusses how to approach code that already exists and how do you refactor that code without taking substantial risks, right?
Right.
Because anytime you want to change code, you're always going to, you know, have the chance of breaking it. So how do you put that code under test, under unit test? How do you mock out what needs to be mocked out before you actually change it or refactor it? That way, when you do refactor it, you can run those unit tests and see if you broke anything. And he goes through several ways of approaching that, several methodologies that are proven, and it's almost invaluable to have that if you are going to be working with a legacy system or if you're in consulting work at all. You know, the Gang of Four design patterns book, although I do want to stress that you should never use a design pattern unless it comes natural.
So right.
You should never, you know, just kind of like, oh, I want to, this seems like a good fit for this design pattern. That should, if you ever say that to yourself, you should not be using that design pattern. It should almost come natural. And then once you realize that you've almost written the design pattern, you can go back and kind of take a look at, you know, the de facto design patterns that are out there and you know, apply better practices to your existing one if you find that you're in that situation. That's been the cleanest way to approach that.
All right. Well, I think those are all good books. I've heard of most of them, and I'll definitely be checking them out. Now, as far as Agile Dash goes, if somebody wants to give it a try, are you planning on releasing it for a beta soon? And if so, is there a place where people can go to sign up to be notified?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to my site, it's Lucid, or the company's site, it's lucidsoft.com, and on the front page, there's a button that says sign up for the beta. If they click that, they can type in their email address, and they'll be notified when the beta goes public. Currently, the beta should be going public in the early August timeframe. So that's when the public beta will be released.
All right, sounds good. Well, I think we're just about out of time. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we wrap this up?
No, I think that's about it.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show. It's really been enlightening, and I think I've learned a lot, and I think our listeners are going to learn a lot as well. So I'm probably going to release this not next Tuesday, but the Tuesday after.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Chuck, for the opportunity to talk and kind of share my experiences trying to start a company. It's been a learning process for me. Definitely a learning process for me, so maybe someone else can
follow down
the same path.
And that's really the point, you know. I think, you know, we're not just here to kind of make it for ourselves, but if we can help a few people along the way, then, you know, then we're doing well.
Yeah, I agree. Exactly.
So, you know, I hope people can take something from this. If you have any feedback, this is for the listeners. If you have any feedback or thoughts or anything to add to what Eric had to say, go ahead and go to the podcast show notes and leave a comment. You can find it at teachmetocode.com/podcast. And, you know, just look for episode 25 where we did this interview. And thanks again, Eric, for coming on the show. And, you know, I'll send you an email when this thing's out.
All right. Thanks, Chuck.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Bye.
All right. Now, wasn't that an awesome interview? Well, I just want to remind everybody to go check out Agile Dash. I think it's going to come out in beta soon. So, you know, just go and have a look. Eric did give the link to get information on it. And, you know, feel free to hire him if you need .NET work done or anything else. Now, again, I just want to remind you, go to www.newrelic.com to check out our sponsor and just to thank him very much for sponsoring the podcast. And I'd also like to remind you that you can leave feedback for the podcast by calling 801-753-8279, or if you want to, you can record feedback on your iPhone or Android phone. And just email it to me, chuck@teachmetocode.com. And finally, I just want to remind you that you can also send me feedback directly at chuck@truespeakpro.com, or just go to the website at http. Or you can go to the website at truespeakpro.com/podcast and leave a comment on the blog. And that'll do it for this week, and we look forward to hearing from you next week.